pilot episode of Strong Style History here for Place to Be Nation. I am your host, Jeffrey Wessel. With me today is my co-host, Steve Cash.
Hey, glad to be here.
Steve and I are part of the Strong Style Story podcast that we do every 3 weeks or so. We host it on our own site at strongstylestory.podomatic.com. We're also on iTunes if you look up Strong Style Story podcast. We also keep a regular blog at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. And I'm on Twitter at strongstylestory without the E on style on Twitter. However, that's usually reserved for the current goings-on in New Japan Pro Wrestling. This show is Strong Style History, in which we take a look back at a period of time or a particular show, in this case for this pilot episode, or, you know, look back at a previous wrestler or unit or what have you, and try to, you know, make sense of that, much as we try to make sense of current New Japan Pro Wrestling on the Strong Style Story podcast. Steve, how are you today?
Not too bad. I'm actually very excited to get into the show.
What we're looking at today is Steve and I, who actually knew each other back when this was current, so it's kind of a walk down memory lane for both of us. We are going to look at the Tokyo Dome show from October the 9th, 2000, back in the days when both New Japan and All Japan would regularly run Tokyo Dome shows instead of just once a year for New Japan, as they do currently. This would be the Do Judge show. And the reason why this was such a major show was this was the first time almost 30 years in existence for both All Japan Pro Wrestling and New Japan Pro Wrestling, that they collaborated on a show. We can start looking back to get to the roots of this. We can go back. We had to go all the way back to January the 31st, 1999, for the death of Shohei Giant Baba, the founder of All Japan Pro Wrestling. Steve, do you want to take it from here?
I mean, Baba's passing was kind of a cultural moment as much of for Japan as it was for wrestling. The major note from it is it created a conflict within All Japan between Baba's widow, Motoko Baba, and Mitsuharu Misawa, who was ace of the company as well as president. And it kind of goes back and forth over what exactly was the kind of the conflict between the two, but it kind of comes down to the direction of the company. You know, there's been kind of, Baba wanted to keep it a very traditional, very streamlined, whereas Misawa wanted to take it more of, you know, kind of a modernized route. And I think if you kind of look at what happened with Noah, you can kind of see where he wanted to go with things.
Right. Well, and on that note, you know, to move it up, you know, there was the conflict between Motoko Baba and Mitsuharu Misawa, which they somehow still kind of kept it together, got along. You know, during this time, you know, just to be a little bit nerdy about it, you know, during this time, the greatest wrestling video game ever made was released under the auspices of All Japan Pro Wrestling. That would be the legendary Virtua Pro Wrestling 2, which, you know, of course, made it here in this country as both WCW NWO Revenge and WrestleMania 2000. I think it was mm-hmm. also for WWF No Mercy, wasn't it?
Mercy was kind of its own thing, because I think by that point, AKI had stopped working on the Virtua Pro series.
Okay, but anyway, I mean, it's so anyway, it still came out under the auspices of All Japan Pro Wrestling, And, you know, Giant Baba is prominently displayed on the cover. Actually, you could see Giant Baba more than you can see, you know, Toshiaki Kawada and Kento Kobashi on the cover of that game.
Yeah, I actually have the manual somewhere. It has, I believe Misawa's on it, pretty featured, and Vader. Vader, I remember. I remember Misawa and Vader and Baba's big head.
Yeah, and you can also see Kobashi and Kawada and kind of see Jun Akiyama, too.
I would love to have a poster of that.
But, yeah, that always was a great cover. But we're kind of getting off topic here.
Yeah.
Anyway, somehow All Japan managed to keep itself together up till May the 28th of 2000, during which time the board of directors of All Japan Pro Wrestling ousted Mitsuharu Misawa as the president. And that set off a chain reaction that the effects of which are still being felt today. Which is the amazing thing about, the circumstances that happened and this show, this particular show, that led to, on June the 13th, when Mitsuharu Misawa, Kento Kobashi, who at the time was the Triple Crown champion, mm-hmm. Akira Taue, Jun Akiyama, and most of the other native Japanese wrestlers left All Japan Pro Wrestling.
All but two.
All but two. We'll get to them because they're going to feature heavily in this show. And then on June the 16th, a press conference was held and Pro Wrestling NOAH was officially formed that day. I remember reporting for LordsOfPain.net way back when. I don't even know is that website still around even?
I think they're still around, but I haven't been to it in years.
But I mean, yeah, neither have I. I mean, this is back when Mr. Tito was still involved heavily in that site. He may still mm-hmm. be. I don't know. If you are, shout out to Mr. Tito. But yeah, that was back in the days. I was reporting, by reporting, I mean, I was hitting the websites and, cribbing from Zach Arnold. I mean, let's be honest here. And, mm-hmm. Back in those days, but that was the period of time. I just remember that those days of constantly refreshing and not knowing what was going to happen next. That was, this was a tumultuous time. I mean, it seems, like another age. I mean, it was 16 years ago, but
yeah, my goodness,
it was, I mean, those were some tumultuous times in pro wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, and not to go off on a tangent, but you just got me thinking about how different things were back then, technology-wise. You know, we live in a world where we have Twitter, we have social media, where we get instantaneous news. You know, but back then, we had to go to a Japanese site, find a site that was reporting news, or go to a BBS, mm-hmm. and we have to find a shoddy translator, and we would just have to refresh every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and you know, my Japanese was actually still kind of okay back then, too. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it was amazing times. And, but to bring this on topic, where does New Japan fall into this? Well, on August the 10th of 2000 at a New Japan show, All Japan's Masanobu Fuchi, who was one of the only two of the native wrestlers to remain. And just to put this into context, Masanobu Fuchi is still with All Japan Pro Wrestling. He's been a literal lifer in All Japan. In fact, he wrestled today at All Japan's Sumo Hall show that happened.
It was glorious.
This morning. I still haven't watched it yet.
I will save it for you, but it was glorious.
I've seen the results, but I have not watched the show.
Oh,
yet.
It must be seen.
But Masanobu Fuchi was one of the only two to remain. He appeared at a New Japan show, got on the microphone and said that he was there to break down the walls that had been up for so long between All Japan and New Japan. The then booker, Riki Choshu, made an appearance in the ring, gave a firm handshake to Fuchi. Now, of course, Choshu himself had been in All Japan mm-hmm. at one time. So this, I mean, it was kind of a reunion of sorts for them, too. But then, during that, Masahiro Chono, Hiroshi Tenzan, and other members of Team 2000, the unit that Chono was leading at the time, showed up in the ring to basically, you know, run down Fuchi. And,
yeah, it's actually a really cool angle.
It was, kind of. I agree. It was.
You don't see things like that anymore.
Right, right. And it was, I mean, this was, I just remember, like I said, at the time, this was just mind-blowing that this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something we need to stress. I mean, we kind of live in a world today where it's commonplace for wrestlers to cross borders, but this really was a decades-long war between two companies, you know? And so
and two men, really. It was between, you know, Giant Baba and Antonio Inoki. I mean, they
mm-hmm.
I think Inoki probably had more respect for Baba than Baba did for Inoki, because I know Baba was quoted as saying he did not trust Inoki at all.
Yeah, given Inoki's history, why would you?
Right, but I mean that goes way, way back to you know, the Japan Wrestling Association
and Riki Dozan. I think it just goes, you know, hand in hand with being rivals, you know. And Baba was, as popular as he was, seen as a number two to Inoki.
Right. So, I mean, things were what they were. So you had Chono and Tenzan basically run down Fuchi. And this sort of all sets up this show that's coming up that we're going to be discussing. In between there, on September the 16th of 2000, Toshiaki Kawada, the only other native wrestler that stayed in All Japan, and one of the four Heavenly Kings, as they're called, appeared in New Japan, basically saying that he was going to crush the then IWGP Heavyweight Champion Kensuke Sasaki.
Yeah, and this set up the Tokyo Dome that we're going to talk about here, and
go ahead.
Well, I was actually just going to kick it off, but do you want to?
Well, I just want to say, I mean, this was, you know, this was all the setup for the show that would be called Do Judge, with two exclamation marks. If you want to see this show that we're about to discuss, unfortunately, if you're subscribed to New Japan World, to NJPW World, only the main event, which was Kensuke Sasaki against Toshiaki Kawada in a non-title match, only that one is available on NJPW World. However, if you go to the if you search out the Real Hero Google Drive, if you delve deep enough, you will find this show. And that's what we've had to go down memory lane here. So some of these matches that we're going to talk about on this show, we only actually saw highlights of.
Yeah, we should note I'm pretty sure it was a VHS release.
Yeah, the copy was definitely a VHS release, because you can see the tracking bar down at the bottom. But you know, again, that's another thing we had to, you know, talk about. That was back in the day. I mean, I remember reporting on this show and reporting on these events, but it was months before any of us saw it, because of tape trading, that was the back in the days of VHS tape trading.
Yeah, you would literally see the results of a show and have to wait a week or two for your place to get the tape in, and then plunk down $10, and then wait 4 weeks for it to come in.
Yeah, I mean. Kids today don't know they're born, basically.
Yep.
You know?
Let's shake our stick at them.
That's right. us pro-oldsters on here. So let's get to the show, which, by the way, this was a show that legit sold out the Tokyo Dome. So we're talking 64,000 people. Not, mm-hmm. Today Wrestle Kingdom, you know, gets between 25 and 30,000, we're considering that a good crowd.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, again, I'm not going to diss New Japan for that, because, you know, times have changed. You know, times have changed. Markets, you know, culture has fragmented so much. You know, everything's so niche now.
There's a lot of factors that go into it.
There really are. There really are. I mean, things are what they are. And, you know, even, you know, WWE attendances and ratings are down. from what they were around this time period. I mean, it's just kind of the way it is. And you can either adjust or die. And, you know, so that's that. I mean, today, I mean, like I said, you know, as we record this, you know, All Japan just ran Sumo Hall. They pulled in 6,500 people, which is not a sellout, but believe it or not, I think it's actually about twice what they were expecting.
Yeah, that's a pretty good number, I thought.
So, anyway, back to Do Judge. So the first few matches actually don't have much to do with All Japan versus New Japan. In fact, they're firmly rooted in New Japan goings on, which, you know, it's a New Japan show, so you're going to have that. The very first match to start off the show was Shinya Hashimoto against Tatsumi Fujinami, who, yes, he was still wrestling at that time. I mean, he's still wrestling now, but, I mean, he was still wrestling in New Japan at that time.
Yeah, this was an odd one.
Now, to go through, this one was a little confusing. Shinya Hashimoto was in the midst of a retirement angle where he got, you know, as part of his feud with, you know, Antonio Inoki's golden boy, Naoya Ogawa, who was a decent pro wrestler, but, you know, kind of a jerk, too.
I would say generous is, or I see you're being very generous.
Yeah. I don't know all the reasons why he's been scrubbed from NJPW World, but...
Oh, he requested it.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, that's what I heard, is he basically told them to take his matches off there.
Oh my goodness. There's even a great Muda match then that's missing. That sucks, but anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Hashimoto was part of this retire, you know, if he couldn't beat Ogawa, he was going to retire or he would be forced to retire. And then he was able to come back and but I think at one time Choshu said that he had to go back to wearing the Young Lion outfit, you know, instead of, his headband and his...
Now, was this the time period where he, like, shaved his head and started wearing MMA gloves? Or was that later?
You know, I don't recall. Who are we talking about? Hashimoto?
Hashimoto, yeah. He had this period where he shaved his head.
I don't recall, to be honest.
Yeah.
I really don't recall. But, it was just... It was just amazing, and so this was part of the retirement angle. So he had to beat Fujinami, which he did. It was a very good match, actually.
Quite literally.
Yeah, literally. He had to beat Fujinami to get his way back in, and it was a good.
It was rough watching it.
It was a good match, though. I mean, it was what it was. Hashimoto did submit Fujinami, and then to make matters even weirder, within a month of this match, Shinya Hashimoto would get fired for real. And,
well, did he get fired for real, or was that to set up 0-1?
You know, I... you know,
because that's a big debate. That's a big debate point today. It's whether or not
whatever the case was, 0-1 was formed, and it's still around today. And Shinya Hashimoto was no longer a New Japan wrestler. Whatever the case was, the end result. I mean, as you said, as we were off the air, it was a work that turned into a shoot.
Yeah,
whatever the end. That was the end result.
Yeah, that's always been the rep. Yeah, you know, you like this match, but it was hard for me to watch. I don't know, it was just a lot of groundwork, and then eventually just Hashimoto just started beating the crap out of Fujinami. Like, it was kind of rough. Like, he had the open finger gloves on, but it was you saw this a lot on the show. You know, the open knuckle punches.
Oh, yeah, punchy,
yeah goo that. Punchy.
Yeah, exactly. From the commentary,
I guess it got across what it needed to accomplish. You know, it was rebuilding Hashimoto.
Yeah, it did, and yeah.
But man, Fujinami looked rough in 2000, and he's still wrestling today, like you said.
Yeah, as part of Tradition, his own company. Moving on, Jushin Thunder Liger in a feature match against Super Delphin, which this was kind of okay. Again, all we had were highlights to go on. Liger was in his black outfit, which kind of surprised me because he didn't really wear that outfit then, did he?
Yeah, he used it. I should have done more research. I believe this is during the period where he was killing juniors. Yeah, he had this gimmick where, wearing the black suit.
That's right.
He was just squashing juniors. Like, I remember, I want to say Koji Kanemoto or somebody came back from an excursion, and Liger just squashed him in 4 minutes at the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, I remember. Okay, you're right. I do remember. So I know that this was, like, before
CTU.
Before CTU, so.
That's what most people kind of refer to it as.
Yeah, the Control Terror Unit. You're right. I had forgotten about that. That was, and this was indicative, this match and the next match was sadly indicative of New Japan booking in the early 2000s with, Liger just destroying the junior division.
Yeah, I just looked it up. he beat Kanemoto in January that year in 356.
Oh, my God. God,
and that was a title match.
Yeah, I do remember this now. Yeah, that was kind of a dark period. No pun intended for Liger. That was not good, and it really just made the junior division look like hot garbage.
And it's funny how much he's praised today for his selflessness.
Well, but at the same time, how much of this was the booking too? Because
well, he was the booker of the junior division.
Oh, well, there you go. But, I mean, that was pretty indicative of this time period, which mm-hmm. we've said on our own show of Strong Style Story, that this time period was just supremely wacky and a lot of times not good.
Push yourself or push your boy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's going to come into play when we get to the main event too. But mm-hmm. But the following match was also indicative of New Japan booking at the time, in which Don Fry of Team 2000 beat Takashi Iizuka. Now, if all you know of Takashi Iizuka is this weird guy with a long goatee and silver teeth and the iron finger from hell and Suzuki Gun, you're in for a shock here, because at one time Takashi Iizuka actually did professionally wrestle.
That you would literally think these were two different people.
Yeah, I mean, you really would. But at the same time, this match was, as I said, pretty indicative of New Japan booking at the time, because there was a lot of fake MMA going on in New Japan Pro Wrestling at the time. And this match was that. It was a lot of fake MMA from featuring a guy who would, be in the final Japanese-made Godzilla movie for 12 years.
Oh, classic.
Hey, I like that movie, actually.
No, I love it, too. I'm not joking.
Godzilla Final Wars. Go track it down. It's fun times. And Don Fry being Don Fry in that movie.
Yep. Don Fry with a katana.
That's right.
No, I don't know about you, but I actually kind of enjoyed this, like, for what it was. It was very clipped, and it was mostly Iizuka getting beat on, but,
it was
it was trying to accomplish, I dug it.
Yeah, but, this, the Liger squash and the main event where it was, this was early 2000s New Japan booking in three matches. It really was. And, there is still a really sour taste in a lot of people's mouths, including me, about this time period.
Oh, well, there's a lot of wrestlers that had sour taste in their mouths.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure. And we saw that, like when Katsuyori Shibata and Kazushi Sakuraba reappeared in New Japan. A lot of people including, you know, the then ace of the company, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Shinsuke Nakamura were just flat out not happy.
PTSD.
Yeah, there was MMA PTSD, yes. That is wholly accurate. Moving on, that we had an IWGP heavyweight title match in which Tatsuhiro Takaiwa defeated Koji Kanemoto. Takaiwa was an interesting guy. He was an interesting wrestler. You couldn't put a handle on what he was, honestly. You know?
Yeah, I just saw him as a junior Choshu. You know,
he was definitely a product of the time, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he was Choshu's boy. He did the Scorpion. He did the Lariat. You know, he had the Triple Power Bomb and the Death Valley Bomb, which, you know, which is cool.
Yeah, but, I mean, not to take away from Takaiwa, I always kind of enjoyed him, actually. He was never one of my favorites in the junior division at the time, but I kind of enjoyed him. Yeah, I didn't hate his matches.
He was a really good power junior. You know.
Yeah, and you know, and to their credit, I mean, even though we criticized the booking at that time, the junior division did really seem a lot more diverse back then.
Yeah, they had a lot of, and there was a lot more kind of interpromotional work, as we saw in the second match with Delphin.
Yeah, with for Delphin, you know, of Osaka Pro Wrestling, and formerly,
and I think you had guys like Sasuke coming in too regularly.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because Sasuke was Liger's dude too.
Oh, and they had Battle Arts too, because that's how Minoru Tanaka got introduced.
Oh my goodness, Battle Arts!
I know,
that
huh?
takes me back. Boy, yeah, wow, that goes back a ways. But anyway, Takaiwa retained in that match. Not a bad match.
For what was shown, I liked it. Death Valley Bomb hold, which I liked.
Yeah, that you don't see that too often.
Yeah,
you really don't. Moving on.
Talk about a match that's relevant today.
Seriously, though. I mean, this is amazing. This match could actually happen today, though I don't know if it would be for the IWGP tag titles, but the way this match was. But Tenkoji, Hiroshi Tenzan and Satoshi Kojima, then repping Team 2000, up against Fighting Club G-Eggs, Yuji Nagata, and Manabu Nakanishi. This is the dads before they were dads, folks.
Yeah, this was something.
This was a good match. I really enjoyed this match.
And yeah, Kojima.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I just loved Tenzan and Kojima's, you know, chemistry even back then.
Oh yeah, they always had this. You know, once they were thrown together because they were put together because you know, Chono was injured, and Chono was always, you know, Tenzan was always the junior to Chono in that team, but yet, you know, Tenzan and Kojima. Yeah, and it's just amazing looking at the differences between then and now. For one thing, Manabu Nakanishi and Hiroshi Tenzan can actually move and wrestle.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing. Nakanishi had long hair back then.
Yeah, he was crazy. I mean, he had long hair. He was throwing the claw.
Yeah. By the way, Hiroshi Tenzan has had the same haircut since 1995, I think.
That's not true. He had a very brief period in 2003 where he shaved the mullet.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was his brief stint as ace.
I forgot about that. I forgot about that.
It was forgettable.
And Satoshi Kojima was still had a little bit of the baby fat on him too.
Mm-hmm.
He looked a little pudgier than he does now.
He's adorable.
But it was great. And this was a good match. I actually recommend watch, even though, again, it was all highlights.
Yeah, a 20-minute match, apparently. So I don't even think half of that was shown, maybe.
Somewhere this match in full has to be out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Because this was a good match. This might have actually, well, okay, maybe the second best match of the night.
Yeah, good finish, too.
It was. It was a great finish. With Kojima laying out Nakanishi with a lariat to retain the IWGP heavyweight tag team titles. The next match was a hoss fight. And there's no way around that. Scott Norton ex of the NWO, now in Team 2000, faces up against the legendary Gaijin from All Japan Pro Wrestling, Dr. Death Steve Williams.
Yeah, this was kind of the first of the three main event matches. I don't know if you would actually call it a main event, but you know, we got a little hype before it. We got some interviews, you know, and I was hyped for it. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, I remember actually really liking Scott Norton at the time.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
me too.
I mean, he wasn't the greatest, but, you know, I remember, you know, like being in attendance at a WCW Thunder taping in Indianapolis.
That's hardcore.
Yeah, and Scott Norton marking out because Scott Norton showed up and he was actually wearing the IWGP title, and marked the hell out for that.
That's awesome. I just remember playing Token at Student 3 for the PlayStation and just laying out people with his powerbomb.
Oh god.
That's my introduction.
That's our second video game reference for the
Yeah,
for
it's
the,
only a matter of
show.
Time before we're doing a video game podcast.
But today's not that day, so...
No, not today.
So anyway, yeah, there's no other way to describe this than a hoss fight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I, for some strange reason, never had seen this match, but I always had heard the rep that it wasn't that good, but I it was enjoyable for, I don't know if it's years of a diluted wrestling, but, you know, I thought Norton looked really good. Doc at times struggled, you know?
He did, and in fact, you know, we were talking about the finish. Dr. Death Steve Williams, you know, beats Norton in this to give All Japan the win over, you know, Team 2000 in this. It looked like Williams actually hurt himself on, because he gave Norton three consecutive, you know, backdrop drivers, and it looked like he hurt himself on that last one.
And he also hulked him up for a doctor bomb too at one point.
Yeah, he did.
Pretty rough.
He did. Yeah, and it did. Yeah, it's. But yeah, I mean, this really was. If this match had a reputation for not being a good match, I hadn't heard it. I mean, it was enjoyable. I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I'm not one to give star ratings, but because I just don't. You know, did I like it? Did I not? That's pretty much my criteria. And I don't get into star ratings. I just can't be bothered. But you know, the fact is, I mean, I did enjoy watching this match.
It served its purpose.
It did. It served its purpose. It got the crowd. I mean, and the crowd was hot for it too.
Oh yeah, they were really into it.
I mean, probably more for Williams than Norton. We're being honest, but
it's kind of crazy comparing today to then, because like literally there was people jumping out of their seats when Doc won.
Oh yeah, I mean you could see it on the video. I mean, yeah. I mean he was a legend even. I mean, he was a legend back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you look at the caliber of people he, you know, Williams was also associated with back then, and we're talking, you know, Stan Hansen and Vader, you know, these monster gaijin in All Japan.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was also the appeal of this match, is this was pretty much, other than Vader, I guess Doc would be number one or two, you know, of All Japan's gaijins. Norton would probably be number one, so this is like, you know, Godzilla and like Ghidorah, I don't know. Going at it,
yeah. So something like that.
Something like, I don't know.
But yeah, it was what it was. It was an enjoyable match. I didn't hate this match.
Five stars.
Okay, sure. the next match, sadly, even though it has one of my all-time favorite guys in New Japan Pro Wrestling in this match, this match was not good. This was the semi-main event. And it was Masanobu Fuchi from All Japan and former junior standout for New Japan who had gone heavy by this point, Shiro Koshinaka, against Team 2000 tandem of Masahiro Chono and Mr. T.
You heard that right.
Mr. T, of course, being Tatsutoshi Goto in a super strong machine mask.
Yeah, if I remember right, I believe this was an ex-partner. So I think they may have revealed it was Mr. T, but I don't think they actually revealed who it was.
Yeah, and later he would be renamed to Team 2000 Machine.
Yeah, and it's patently obvious who it is.
Yeah, it wasn't Junji Harada.
No, you actually have Junji Harada screaming at him at the end of the match.
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, that's right.
But, no, I didn't enjoy this whatsoever. It was a lot of brawling, a lot of stalling.
Just to give some history, too, Shiro Koshinaka actually was in All Japan Pro Wrestling for the first 6 years of his career, from 1979 to 1985. So this wasn't too out of place for Koshinaka to team with Fuchi.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like that was basically the storyline there.
Yeah. And he would actually, I think Koshinaka would actually end up back in, I think he would actually end up back in All Japan, I think, to being a champion carnival, wouldn't he? Like,
he did some dates. He did. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so this match was not good when all said and done. Mr. T, Tatsutoshi Goto, beats Koshinaka with a lariat. Riki Choshu, then, of course, the booker of New Japan, got on the mic afterwards. Talk some smack. Chono, hard to believe that at the time, if you remember, Chono was like, a number one Rudo of New Japan. Moving on to the main event, this was, what the show was built around, and it was fully deserved. This was Kensuke Sasaki, the then IWGP heavyweight champion, ace of the company, going up against, the ace by default of this time in All Japan, due to circumstances. He was not the Triple Crown champion at the time, though, it must be noted. But it was Toshiaki Kawada, Dangerous K, the last remaining heavenly king in All Japan. I'm just going to couch this with saying that at the time, Kawada was not my favorite of the Heavenly Kings. I was always much more of a Kenta Kobashi fan of any of those. If any of the 4+1, including if we include Akiyama in that. But, I always respected Kawada. He was in some of the best matches I'd ever seen. At the time, I hated Kensuke Sasaki with the fury of a thousand suns.
And the entire internet.
I despise Kensuke Sasaki.
Yeah, hated.
It's not like I didn't have reasons to either.
I think it should be noted for anyone that didn't follow the time. I mean, he was basically the booker's boy.
He was.
And if you watch Choshu and you watch Kensuke around that period, they're splitting images. Kensuke did the lariat. The only thing that differentiated him was the Northern Lights bomb and maybe the judo throw, the Ippon-se.
Right, but in modern parlance, New Japan booking at this time could be summed up with "lol, Sasaki wins."
Yeah.
I mean, it infuriated me at the time. It really did. And, lest we forget, Kensuke Sasaki is also, somewhat implicated in the death of a young lion trainee. But, which led to Hiroshi Hase leaving the company.
He ended up going to All Japan.
He did.
Yeah. My take on this is kind of a little bit different because I had just actually got into Japanese wrestling around this period. And I remember, Ambrosia's Puroresu page. Mm. It was this. Do you remember this?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I remember that out of the recesses of my memory. I found them.
Yeah, there was Zach Arnold.
Yeah.
There was the great Hisa.
Mm-hmm.
And which I found him on Facebook not too long ago, actually.
Yeah.
And yeah, Ambrosia's pro wrestling page. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and
goodness.
He uploaded this match in horrible real player format. And so my first real big taste to, like, you know, other than, you know, WCW, New Japan stuff, you know, this was the match, and it completely enthralled me. The presentation, I didn't understand the backstory. You know, all I saw was this giant stage and these dramatic camera cuts and these pans. And so I didn't know all of the backstory behind Kensuke and, you know, how he was overpushed and, you know, the death of the rookie. And, but something about him, just, I loved Kensuke, you know, for some reason he was the person that I came out loving in that match.
Well, you've known me long enough. You know who my go-to guy always was,
oh, yeah.
will and forever will be, you know, Keiji Muto. So, it just seemed to me Kensuke Sasaki was like the complete everything that Keiji Muto was not to me. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I can see you. Very Muto was flashy, you know, flamboyant. Kensuke just likes to leer at you and dump you on your head.
Yeah, right. So really, Sasaki and Kawada actually, I guess, were kind of a good match. They were a good match together.
And, you know, something we should stress for especially the last three matches, they really did have this big fight feel, you know. You really could feel, you know, this tangible kind of electricity
air,
almost.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially for this match. Because, I mean, the thing that I loved about this, you know, and I think this might have been one of the reasons why I got sucked in, was, you know, you see the New Japan guys on the outside. You know, you see Liger, I think Nakanishi's out there. Yep. And they are just stressing out.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So it's like, it feels so real.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was, I mean, no, I totally agree. I mean, this match was, even though I hated, you know, Sasaki with the Fury of a Thousand Suns, as I said, there was no, even back then when I was covering this, there was absolutely no denying that, you know, this was a historic match for what it meant. I mean, this was, you know, the two biggest companies in Japan, and these were their aces coming together. I mean, we all thought, you know, Keiji Muto and Nobuhiko Takada during the New Japan UWFI feud was something. Holy cow. You know,
mm-hmm. I don't know which feud is actually drew more, but yeah, it's up there. These two,
it's up there. I mean, I'm sure. I think long term that the New Japan versus UWFI feud drew more, but I think, you know, just for a single match, this was monumentous.
Yeah.
And it was a great, it was a classic match. I mean, it really was.
Yeah, I mean, technically wise, I don't think it's not that good. But like I said, the backstory, the crowd, you know, the raw emotion of all of it, you know, it does make it a classic match.
It does, and I mean, you could feel. I mean, you see the sweat flying off of Sasaki and Kawada both as they're chopping the hell out of each other.
That is just lasting image in my mind.
It will, and you know, lest we forget, and you know, even though, as I said, I never was a fan of Kensuke Sasaki, but you know, 5 years later, he and, you know, one of my all time favorites, Kenta Kobashi, would have the greatest match in Pro Wrestling Noah history. At Destiny in the Tokyo Dome, you know.
I think all the negatives that could be said about Kensuke around this time and before, he really had a remarkable comeback in his career.
He did, and you know, I gained a new respect for him when he was, you know, when he was publicly making the rounds saying, hey, he's looking for any sort of work at all.
Yeah.
To care for, you know, Akira Hokuto, who just had, you know, a mastectomy. And yeah, I mean, there's so many to be said for that. So perhaps, you know, he's done his, you know, any of his past crimes, perhaps he's done, you know, some sort of penance.
Yeah, and it should be noted that Hase himself has seemed to have forgiven Kensuke.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he wasn't intentionally trying to kill a trainee. I'm positive. I'm also positive that New Japan did their best to cover the shit up.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of shady things back then.
Well, I mean, there still are today. It's just, you know, now in this, you know, in this, you know, more corporate times, they maybe are better covered up, you know? But yeah, I mean, it was what it was. The match is great. This is the only match from this show that's on New Japan World. If you don't watch anything on this show except this match, I wouldn't fault you, because this is, you know, definitely the match to see.
I agree. This was the draw.
And the shockwaves of what happened afterwards, up to and including Sasaki immediately vacating and surrendering the IWGP heavyweight title.
I loved that so much.
Like I said, when I was covering this, I could not believe it.
It might be part of the reason it kind of endeared me to him, you know? And I actually compare it a little bit. I don't know if this was the design, but I almost compare it to when Hulk Hogan lost to the Ultimate Warrior, and he did that kind of gracious, you know, oh, I'm going to give you the belt, and basically he stole Warrior's heat. So I kind of feel like Kinsuke was kind of doing that a little bit.
Well, yeah, but still, things were what they were. Sasaki immediately vacated the IWGP title, which led to another Tokyo Dome show, Wrestling World 2001, in which Kensuke Sasaki would regain the IWGP heavyweight title. Wrestling World 2001 was on January 4th of 2001. You know, it was one of the traditional January 4th shows that we now call Wrestle Kingdom, but this was Wrestling World 2001. Kensuke Sasaki would regain the IWGP title in a tournament final, beating, of all people, Toshiaki Kawada.
There you go.
To re-get that. But that wasn't all that happened on that show, as someone who would have one of the greatest years of any wrestler's career would begin at this show, but that is a story for another time.
Oh.
And that is something we will get to on a forthcoming edition of...
That would be a good topic.
That would be. It may not be the next show we do, but it's definitely going to come up, because it's one of my personal favorite things that ever happened in New Japan history.
Yeah.
Even if New Japan, in the end, would actually look like a bunch of dummies in the process.
Man, but, you're making me want to bust out Lion's Pride.
Oh, boy.
Great book, anyway, by the way.
It is a great book by Chris Charlton. Mm-hmm. Free plug there. So anyway, so that's our let's judge in the end, shall we? Overall, what would you say about this show?
Historically, it's definitely up there in terms of what would I call it? The third generation of New Japan, basically. It's one of the more important shows. You know, it kind of goes down from here.
Yeah,
in more ways than one.
This was kind of this was definitely a watershed moment for New Japan, for all Japan, and for pro wrestling in Japan. I mean, this was a watershed moment.
Yeah, things quickly in Japan start changing around this point.
They sure did, and you know, not without reason. But I mean, it's just this was definitely a turning point. Which is basically all the more amazing that the entirety of this show is not on New Japan World.
Yeah, I think there's just problems with rights issues, which is unfortunate.
Yeah,
is what it is.
I can understand that. I can see that. But I mean, so much came out of this show that this is definitely one of those, you know, nexus points in the history of New Japan and pro wrestling in Japan.
Yeah,
that it really should not be overlooked, taken lightly. I think as a whole show, if I had to give a star rating to an entire show, I'll definitely give it a 4 stars out of 5, because there were some bunk matches in this, but I mean there were 2 absolute classics too.
Yeah, I would give it 4 stars on historical importance alone.
Yeah, and we had to judge it on that, but you know that we have the hindsight of history to look at that too. So
yeah, and you know, it did set up the January Tokyo Dome pretty well, but after that, like I said, things go kind of downhill.
Things go kind of wacky after that. So But that is a topic we will get to on a forthcoming edition of Strong Style History. I just want to take this time here to, well, Steve, do you want to plug anything real quick or say hi to anybody or?
No, just, I, you know, had a blast. It was good. Good time talking, you know, classic New Japan.
Yeah. We often talked about this on our show that we wanted to do a show like this. We just never had the time to do it, but now, you know, as we head into our 1 year, anniversary for the Strong Style Story podcast, We finally found some time, and we like to thank Place to Be Nation for giving us the initial forum to do so. We hope to be back on Place to Be Nation with, you know, we'll try to do this about once a month or so if time allows. You know, maybe every 6 weeks or so. It's not like we're on a deadline for, you know, talking about historical New Japan.
No, and there's a lot of topics we can touch on, so it's pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have about 40 years worth of topics to discuss. So, anyway, just to recap, my name is Jeffrey Wessel. I am the main host of the Strong Style Story podcast at strongstylestory.podomatic.com. You can also find us on iTunes at Strong Style Story Podcast. I run a regular blog called strongstylestory.tumblr.com, and I am also on Twitter at strongstylestory without the E because of Twitter character limits. Steve can be found at Steve Cash.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all over the place. So just, you know, say hi to us if you'd like. Let us know what you think of Strong Style Story or indeed Strong Style History, this show. Once again, we'd like to thank Place to Be Nation for giving us this forum. Our producer today is Chris DeMassino, who's also a regular co-host of the Strong Style Story podcast. He couldn't be here, but he's doing some production work on this today, so we're going to give him a shout out.
Love you, Chris.
And stay tuned because the week of December the 18th, Strong Style Story will be recording its anniversary show after 1 year. And it's also going to be our Wrestle Kingdom 11 preview because we do talk modern New Japan too. So anyway, on behalf of Steve Cash, I'm Jeffrey Wessel. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this and we hope to be back again soon right here on Place to Be Nation. Thanks a lot. Take care. Goodbye.
Sayonara.